One of the advantages of living in a regional city is that you can see the night sky. Can we have that?
Karen got it.
Oh, okay. Milky Way there. That's what the psalmist would have seen. He records it in Psalm 19 there. The Milky Way, although the Milky Way is better seen from the southern hemisphere. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of her hands. That's not quite what the Bible says. I deliberately put a change in. God is not female, but then God is not male either, so I thought I'd just stir the pot a bit by putting that in. It's either one is wrong. The skies have always held a fascination for us, and it's been the basis of religion, because the creation is the work of a divine entity in all faiths, and even in animism such as Aboriginal culture, there's a creator. And it's formed a religious interpretation of the environment we live in. Now, the psalmists go further for the next one, where you've made humans rule over the works of your hands. You put everything under their feet. That's another error. It's not Psalm 19, it's Psalm 8. That was an unfortunate error. The serpent said in the garden that we'll be like God, and so the psalmist takes that thought up, that we've been made a little lower than the angels, that the world's been put under our feet. We turn night into day, and we play cricket at night. We talk to somebody in London directly. We can get to San Francisco and arrive before we left. We have become like God. And so that all this fits perfectly with religious interpretation of our society. That God is in charge, that he's put us in a favoured place. And the New Testament goes further and says that Jesus was responsible for all this creation, that Jesus is the summary of all that religion has to say. So that's nice. We're comfortable. We live under the domination of God in his world. God's in the heavens and we're okay. Except the psalmist wouldn't have seen the sort of picture that you get from Hubble. The universe is chaos. It was formed by the mother of all explosions in the Big Bang. Any element higher than iron on the periodic table was formed in a supernova, which is another massive explosion. All this regularity of the stars and seasons, which we've used for navigation, the ancients used for navigation and telling, time telling and so on, interpreting of the society, is really underlined by chaos and confusion. The dust cloud is suffused with electromagnetic radiation, which is deadly for us. We live in a very quiet part of a very small galaxy, and we're protected by our Earth's magnetic field from radiation. This should make us think a bit about what religion means. And the Bible readings today take up this theme, that it's in the emergencies of life that we encounter Jesus. Recall the four events that Jesus that are recorded of Jesus. The first is they are sailing the lake and there's a storm. Now his companions were fishermen. They'd been on the lake all their lives. They knew the lake. If they said they're going to drown, you believe it. And Jesus commands, in fact, he rebukes the storm and says to be calm. And it happens. And they say, who's this? The second event concerns the man who's possessed of demons. Now, modern psychology tends to dismiss this demon possession as some sort of just a mental aberration. But I think I go with Jesus and say that there is another world of spirit, another universe, if you're a physicist, that is inhabited by spiritual beings, and it intersects with our world. And this man was possessed by the spirits. Jesus commands them. He showed that he's Lord of this world as well. So they go into the pigs. Interesting. The third encounter is with the woman with a hemorrhage. She has had no relief in 12 years. And she recognises the authority of Jesus and touches his clothing and is healed. The fourth event is a tragic juvenile death where Jairus' daughter is ill. Jesus said to the people, no, she's only sleeping, and they laughed at him. They said, don't be stupid, we can tell when somebody's dead. And yet he restores her to life. Now all these events are in everyday life. They're crises. And that's where Jesus intersects with us. The response in every case was fear. They were scared. When the storm was still, the disciples said, who's this? They were afraid. When the people saw what Jesus had done and the man at Gerasa, they were afraid. It's repeated. The people who saw the man were afraid. The people who heard about it were afraid, and they said, Jesus, please go away. We're uncomfortable. The woman that was healed came trembling. She realised she'd stepped into an area that made her really feel uncomfortable. And Jairus and his wife, the Bible says, were out of their wits. They were ecstasis, the Greek is, mean you're outside yourself. You're just completely at a loss to interpret what's going on. So we meet Jesus in our extremities when we're in everyday situations where it's getting beyond us. Now, there's an Old Testament precedent for this in the book of Isaiah. Chapter 6, the prophet's in the temple, and suddenly he has a vision of God. God's glory fills the temple. And his response is, woe is me, I've seen the Lord. That message translators, I'm as good as dead. There's no future. There's no way out of this. I've seen God and my life is forfeit. And that's the response if we have a real encounter with the living God. Every true encounter will engender fear. A bit of a testimony. I was an engineering student in a technical drawing class. A guy next to me who I'd known at school said to me, what do you think about God? And I said, well, which team does he play for? And he said, can I read you something? So he read Isaiah chapter 53 of the suffering, the lamb before God. And I become convicted of sin. I was scared. I couldn't explain myself to God. I couldn't justify my living and breathing. Just as Isaiah said, I'm a man of unclean lips and I live in a society of unclean lips. If we encounter God, we are scared, we're beyond ourselves. In the Isaiah experience, an angel takes a coal from the fire and cleanses his lips. An encounter with Jesus should result in redemption, but it will be an uncomfortable experience. The engineering student was riding a motorbike at that time, thought, that's a bit dangerous, I think I'll take the train. So I started taking the train in the week before the next technical drawing class, which I wasn't looking forward to. And in Sydney at Central Station, going north, the tracks are north, south, north, south. I was going north, another train was going north, two tracks over, and it derailed at Central Station. Brought down the stanchions, blue flashes. If you've ever heard about a train crash in slow motion, that was it. You'd see it all happening right next door out the window. Put my feet up on the chair because I didn't want to be electrocuted with all these wires. And I thought, God's after me. And the next week I gave my life to Christ in the corridor of the Sydney Technical College. But that is my experience. I don't know what your experience is, but what the gospel is saying is that Jesus meets us in all these extreme situations. He is Lord of and God of all. To finish, Isaiah confronts God, is confronted by God, and God said, I have a task, who will go? Isaiah said, Lord, send me. And that should be the outcome of any true experience of Christ. There's fear, there's redemption, there's liberation to do, to look to the future. Now, we're not in the prime of life, most of us. I was reading the prayer book, and we're described as of riper years, which I think is much nicer. But we can all do something. We're all called to do something if we've encountered Jesus. What we can do, I think, all of us, is to pray. We need to be praying for our society, need to be praying for our world. Don't need reminding about current events, that our comforts are likely to be taken away from us.